This is a CBC podcast.
Support for delivery of this podcast comes from Chevrolet. At Chevrolet, we bring people together with the things that matter to them most. Visit Chevrolet.gm.ca.
Hello, I'm Andy Berry, the host of Metro Morning on CBC Radio 1, 99.1 in Toronto. And this is our weekly podcast, Toronto This Week. It features highlights of our local and regional shows on CBC, shows like Here and Now, Ontario Morning, and Fresh Air. But first, here's an item from Metro Morning. It was supposed to be a fresh start in a new country. Tom Liang and his family arrived in Toronto from China last year. Like many new immigrants, they were hoping for a better life. But that dream was shattered this past summer. On July 11th, Tom Liang's wife, Yan Zhang, and their three-year-old son, Lula, was hit by an allegedly drunk driver. Yan Zhang died at the scene. Her son, Lula, barely survived. Recently, Metro Morning's Lou Joe visited Tom Liang and his son at the Bloorview Kids Rehab Center, where the boy is recovering. This month, Lou has joined us in the studio this morning. Excuse me. Lou, good morning.
Good morning, Andy.
So what has the past 4 months been like for Lula and his dad, Tom Liang?
Well, Andy, Lula is doing remarkably well considering what the car accident did to him. Fractured skull, severe brain injury, and broken legs. And he was in a coma for 6 days and seven nights. And keep in mind, he's only 3 years old. Doctors weren't even sure if he would even make it. And every day his father has been there. And fortunately, Lula came out of the coma eventually. And he had several operations. Now he's in rehab.
But he is recovering.
He is recovering. According to the doctor, the brain injury means he will have lifelong disabilities. But because he's still so young, doctors don't know yet how disabled he will eventually be. And his father's life now is very straightforward, Andy. Every morning, Tom Liang gets up from his fold-up cot in Lula's hospital room. He goes to work, and after work, he heads back to the room to catch up with Lula.
出去玩了没有？出去散步了没有？到湖边去玩玩，看见你的小金鱼。小金鱼。
So Andy, as you can hear, they are speaking in their native language, Mandarin, and Lula was telling his dad, Tom Liang, about the goldfish he saw earlier that day. And you might have noticed that what the brain injury has done to Lula's language ability.
It was almost a miracle that he survived the head-on collision at all. The person who was missing in that room, of course, is his mom.
Mm-hmm.
She was killed in that car accident. What can you tell us about her?
Well, Andy, Yan Zhang came here last year with her husband and son. Back in China, Yan was a screenwriter. And here in Toronto, she hoped to go back to university to study English literature. And she worked very hard to get ready for that. Took language classes a few times a week to improve her English. And her husband, Tom Liang, got his first job earlier this year. And he's an engineer at a local IT company. Earlier this summer, the family talked about buying their first house and having another baby. But that was before July 11th.
And remind us of what happened on that day. This is 4 months ago now.
Yes. It was early evening, Andy, just before supper. Yan Zhang and Lulu, they were in their neighborhood park flying a kite. And on their way home, they were walking along McCowan Road. And out of nowhere, a van drove up onto the sidewalk, plowing into them, and Yan died instantly. Lula barely survived. The driver was arrested and charged with impaired driving, causing death and bodily harm. Tom Liang was devastated.
Lula was conscious, 一直昏迷了七天，六七夜六天，那个时候。
After the crash, I spent nearly every waking moment by his bedside, praying for a miracle. I had no time to think about anything else and even mourn the loss of my wife. Until one day, I was in a friend's car when music started to play.
God with me 的音乐。
it was God with me. That was when the reality set in and I realized my wife and best friend was gone, forever left me. For the first time after the accident, I broke down, crying out loud, and my heart completely crumbled.
Oh, Lou, he survived, but his life has obviously been shattered, and yet he found a way to keep going. How did he do that?
Well, a big part is his son came out of the coma. That's what gave him hope. But that's not all of it. As you know, Andy, most Chinese are not religious. They are atheists. And Tom was no exception until this accident. You heard him mention that song, God With Me, he heard in his friend's car. And Tom actually has become a Christian, and that gave him strength. Yan is forever gone, and I need to be stronger than ever for Lele, making sure he has a normal and happy life. And it was God who gave me that strength. During this difficult time, I felt God has been with me, listening to me, answering to my prayers, and showing me his love. He makes sure I'm strong enough to live on. That, I would say, is my greatest gain from this tragedy, to feel more connected to God.
Lou, in that year, only a year that Tom and his family have been here from China, has he developed any support system?
Yes, Andy. To answer your question, they had a surprising amount of support. People in the Chinese community raised money to bring his family here and to help pay for his wife's funeral, which cost more than $10,000. And they've also raised a trust fund for Lele. By the way, Lele means happiness in Chinese. Tom plans to donate half of the trust fund he received to Mothers Against Drunk Driving, and he wants to do what he can to make sure no other family goes through what he had to experience. I never realized how fragile life can be. In a split second, my whole world has been destroyed. We came to this land with a dream, and now my wife's buried in this land with her dream unfulfilled. But as Yan's husband, I hope she didn't die in vain, and no other family will ever know this type of pain of losing a spouse or visiting their motionless child in a hospital bed.
All of us, Lou, wish good luck to both Tom Liang and little Lele. Meanwhile, what's the latest on the case against the person who ended his wife's life?
The driver of this van is still in jail and again charged with impaired driving, causing death and bodily harm. There is no trial date yet. And Lele will be in this rehab center for at least another few months. His future is very much a question mark. We'll keep following this story, Andy.
Thank you, Lou.
Thanks, Andy.
I'm Andy Berry, and this is our weekly podcast, Toronto This Week. Now here's Matt Galloway with a highlight from this week's Here and Now.
A new report blames pollution from cars for the deaths of more than 400 people a year in this city. The city's public health department put this report together. It's based on some earlier numbers that showed air pollution generally is killing about 1,700 people a year in Toronto. Joining me now to talk about the findings, Dr. David McEwen. He is the city's medical officer of health. Doctor, hello.
Hello, Matt. How are you?
I'm well. Let's talk about these numbers. Shocking to hear that car pollution killing something like 440 people a year. The obvious question is, how did you get to that number?
Well, we've known for some years that air pollution is harming our health, and the numbers you mentioned earlier, the 1,700 premature deaths and 6,000 hospitalizations, have become quite familiar to people who are concerned about the impact of air pollution on health. What we didn't know was how much of that air pollution was having an impact on, coming from cars and trucks was having an impact on health. So that's what the new study tells us, that of the 1,700 deaths, 440 of them are directly as a result of motor vehicle pollution.
And you can connect that right to essentially the exhaust pipe.
Yes, the way we do it is by modeling the contribution that cars and trucks make to the pollution that's in our air by starting right on the ground with the number of cars and trucks, the types of vehicles, the amount of pollutions that they emit. You build up a picture of the part of our air pollution problem which is coming from motor vehicles, and then plug that into a model which allows us to link it to health outcomes. That's where you get the 440 premature deaths and 1,700 hospitalizations.
As you said, we've known that pollution, smog in the air, is bad for you. Were you surprised by the 440 figure?
Not surprised, I don't think, because we know that motor vehicles are one of the most important sources of air pollution in our city. What's positive about this new study is it tells us how much we have to gain by reducing pollution from motor vehicles. If we can just shift people out of vehicles into other more active forms of transportation and get the emissions from those vehicles down by even 30%, we'll save 200 lives in this city.
Is there an economic cost to all of this? I hate to reduce it to dollars and cents, but I mean, that much smog, not everybody is dying. A lot of people are just ill and perhaps hospitalized. What's the cost of that?
Well, there is an economic cost. Any kind of ill health comes with economic costs, and those are both the direct costs of paying for health care as well as costs in lost productivity and indirect impacts on society. Mm. In this study, we did calculate the economic costs for just those 440 deaths, and it came to about $2.2 billion. So there's a very significant economic burden that's placed on the community by our current level of air pollution.
It's just some people would find it still difficult to connect these dots because we have coal-fired generating plants that are still belching out smog in the air. We have cross-border smog, if you can use that phrase. Can you really connect that to the number of automobiles? I mean, is it that straightforward?
In this case, we can, yes, because we can build up a picture of the air pollution that comes from tailpipes of vehicles and attach that to the burden of illness that we know comes from air pollution of all types. So it is possible to isolate the portion of our air pollution health problem that's coming from motor vehicles, and that's, it turns out to be quite a significant portion.
And then the obvious next step, I suppose, is to have less of those motor vehicles on the road.
Well, certainly to start to shift people into healthier forms of transportation. Now, this is not going to be an easy or a short-term thing to do. What I believe this study gives us is an additional health rationale. When people say that it's going to be expensive or difficult to start moving away from motor vehicles into more walking, more cycling, more public transit, there are costs to that. What the study tells us is that we're paying a cost every day today as a result of the health consequences of the way we move around the city.
How do you do that? How do you get people to not drive their cars? One of the ways that people have suggested is you charge them. You essentially put a toll, a road tax, a congestion charge in, so that people know there's an economic cost to driving your car as well.
Well, there's no single policy or intervention which is going to take us all the way to the goal of having healthier air. It's going to take time. It's going to take a number of different steps. I think that any of these policy proposals should be assessed in terms of its ability to make a difference in air quality and our health.
But from a health perspective, would you want people to be charged so that they know this is a fee that you have to pay essentially to drive because it costs us economically and it costs us in terms of health?
Well, road pricing is one of a number of initiatives that could be looked at. I don't think anything should be taken off the table. I think that it is going to take a number of different approaches to shift what has become pretty much entrenched behavior. I mean, we all like to get in our cars and travel around. The important thing is to make the alternatives more attractive. We need a top-notch, accessible, inexpensive transit system. We need good pedestrian-friendly city, and we need extensive bike lanes which are safe and go where people want to go.
I don't want to keep hammering on about this, but if you talk about a transit system that's safe and accessible and cheap, I mean, this is on the day that the prices for the TTC have gone up. People have talked for years about getting more people to cycle and getting people onto public transit. This would seem to be a pretty good incentive. When you say 440 citizens in the city of Toronto will die each year because of the deaths, because of pollution from cars, I'm just wondering what else you need. What will it's inherently political. What will convince politicians that this is something they need to champion?
Well, I hope this is one more rationale, one more argument which will move people in the right direction, in this case, in the right direction for the health of the people of Toronto. I'm encouraged by some movement that we've seen lately. I'm encouraged that more people are using public transit. I'm encouraged that the City of Toronto is putting forward plans for a more sustainable transportation system. I think there's more receptiveness in the community than there has been in years past. Mm-hmm. People are coming to the realization that we have to make these changes. This study gives us one more good reason to do so for the sake of our health.
Dr. David McEwen, good speaking with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
David McEwen is the city's medical officer of health. What would it take for you to get out of your car if 440 people are dying every year because of pollution that can be traced right back to the tailpipe? What would it take for you to get out of your car and get around the city elsewhere? Should we really strongly consider the idea of road tolls, which are inherently political, as I mentioned? Should we look at increased funding for the TTC, perhaps other ways to get people out of their automobiles? What would it take for you to get out of the car? 416-205-2700.
That was Matt Galloway, host of Here and Now, heard weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 on CBC Radio 1, 99.1 in Toronto. I'm Andy Berry, and this is our weekly podcast, Toronto This Week. Now here's Wei Chen with a highlight from this week's Ontario Morning.
If you were to make a list of things definitively Canadian, street hockey or road hockey would likely be included. But in Kingston, street hockey has become a big issue recently under city bylaws. It is illegal to play sports on city streets, and that includes street hockey. That didn't sit well with one city councillor. Rob Matheson made a motion to amend the bylaw to allow street hockey where it's safe. That was back in the spring. Since then, the debate has been forced into triple overtime. This week, council decided to seek public input. That's for the third time. To explain, we've reached Councillor Rob Matheson at his home in Kingston. Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, take us back. Why did this issue come before council earlier this year?
Well, it came before council as a result of a complaint that was brought to my attention from one of my constituents saying that they were being harassed by bylaw enforcement officers when they were playing in a safe cul-de-sac that they've been playing on for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, that doesn't really make sense. I don't see why, if you're not impeding traffic and if you're not causing a danger to anybody, and that we have this bylaw in place. And I did a little bit of research and found that most of the city, before amalgamation, did not have a bylaw prohibiting street sports, including the Loyalist Township, which was a part of my district before amalgamation, and the only part of the city that did was Kingston.
Hmm. And what exactly does the bylaw say?
Basically, it prohibits the playing of street sports and street hockey in particular on city streets, on all city streets.
Any street. Has anyone actually been fined?
Nobody's been fined, but they have been basically talked to and advised, and if it escalates to a point where it persists, the potential is there for fines to start happening.
And so how would you like to see that bylaw amended?
Well, I think some common sense has to prevail, and based on the information reports we received back from our staff, most municipalities do not have bylaws covering street sports at all. There's a couple cities that are proactive in allowing it, such as City of Ottawa, where they've passed a resolution this spring basically resolving that street sports is a lawful use of residential streets. So I'd like to see it amended to that type of common sense approach where we're not harassing kids that are wanting to play instead of outside, or instead of inside playing computer games on PlayStations, that they want to play some hockey in the streets in safe areas.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see them able to do that.
What would you define a safe area?
Well, I'd say, you know, a residential street where there's very low flow traffic, cul-de-sacs. Parents and kids have an instinctive knack of finding these type of streets to play on, and nobody ever wants to get injured. Nobody has a death wish, and it's one of those situations where I think the only complaints that should be called in are when kids are impeding traffic and when their safety is definitely at risk through high traffic areas.
Mm-hmm. People have been facing off over this issue since last June, I guess.
Yeah,
give me the argument of the people against.
Well, there's a couple arguments. The arguments against the majority one for some reason is liability. For some reason, there's a perceived potential of liability to the city should we consider allowing kids to play on streets.
Like if they were to be injured, you
if
mean?
If they were to be injured or, God forbid, killed. However, after doing further research myself on that particular item, never in the history have I found, and I'd love to hear it if anybody knows anything differently. Has there ever been a court case or a city found guilty on either side of the issue in a court case in relation to any street sports? So, to me, it's sort of a phantom menace in a way that we're not doing something because there's this phantom menace hanging over our heads over a potential liability issue where there's really no precedence for it.
If that's the phantom menace, what's the true reason people are opposed?
I think the true reason, in a lot of ways, is people are concerned about property damage, some of them. There's some members of the public that were brought forward those concerns where they've, perhaps had a puck instead of a kids were playing with a puck instead of a tennis ball or that type of issue, and they hit their car, they hit their garage door. There's also perhaps some regulations that have to be put in place surrounding it, where kids, instead of playing on inline skates, which makes them a little bit fast and can be dangerous when you're playing on a street or entering onto a person's lawn because they leave imprints in people's lawns.
So how would you address all those concerns?
Well, I think there has to be some common sense. Ottawa's put in place some guidelines for play where kids have to play in sneakers and with a tennis ball, and it's only on safe residential streets, as well as they have to move for traffic when it comes. And these are some common sense things that most kids are already doing. And I think we can implement the same sort of ability here.
Now, why is it that you're seeking public input again for the third time, I understand?
Well,
haven't they already said everything that needs to be said?
I think so. But to keep this issue alive, I think it's important to allow the public one more time at the can, so to speak. And by sending it back to committee, it allows both that and allows the committee itself to provide more input rather than at a council meeting where there's really a lack of input and a lack of free flow of conversation in terms of how we want to go about addressing these issues.
What do you make of the fact that it's happening in Kingston, where the place where a lot of people say is the birthplace of hockey?
Well, that's the biggest irony to me is that we're having this issue here. You might have heard that Don Cherry actually called and weighed in on the issue with me and left a message saying that even when he was a kid playing hockey in the streets of Kingston, the police would come around and take away their hockey sticks. So he kind of part of that anecdotal story that it's been a while that Kingston's been one of the leaders in prohibiting street sports, I guess, and he was supportive of opening up the bylaw and allowing some common sense to proceed.
And so when will this when will we hear the end of this?
I'm hoping we'll hear it before Christmas. That's a nice present to all the hockey players under the Christmas tree. But, unfortunately, sometimes I'm finding as a new councillor and politician that the bureaucratic process and the political process isn't as speedy as I'd like it to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to hold my breath and wait for a final outcome within a short period of time. It's already taken, obviously, since spring. I'm hoping that just because of that, it will be a little bit speedier at the new committee because all the public input will be forwarded that was provided at those committee meetings to this new committee that will be looking at it. And I'm hoping that within a couple meetings that they should be able to come up with some sort of recommendation.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning to talk about this.
A pleasure.
Good luck with it.
Thank you.
Rob Matheson is a Kingston City Councillor. Now we want to hear from you. What's your opinion? Street hockey, should it be allowed on the streets? Is it a national treasure or a national nuisance? Call our answering machine, 1-800-304-8699. That is toll free, 1-800-304-8699, or drop us an email, ontariomorning@cbc.ca.
That was Wei Chen, the host of Ontario Morning, heard weekday mornings from 6 to 8:30 throughout much of southern and central Ontario on CBC Radio 1. And that will do it for our weekly podcast, Toronto This Week. You can hear all our shows live on CBC Radio 1. If you're in Toronto, that's on 99.1, and live on the web at cbc.ca/Toronto. And don't forget, much of our network programming is also now available via podcast. You'll find that at cbc.ca/podcast. We're also looking for some feedback on our podcast, and you can email us at metromorning@toronto.cbc.ca. I'm Andy Berry, the host of Metro Morning. We're heard weekday mornings from 6 to 8:30 on CBC Radio 1, 99.1 in Toronto. For all of us here at CBC Radio in Toronto, have a good week. We'll have another podcast for you next weekend.
Hi, I'm Jesse Brown. I'm the host of Search Engine, a new CBC radio show that is all about how the internet is changing politics and culture. It's not a gadget show. We don't really care much about technology so much as we care about the effect that technology is having on the world that we live in. All of the surprising and significant and funny stories that we bring you on Search Engine are about things that are happening right now. In the short time that we've been on the air, we've already become the CBC's most popular news podcast in the States. So come find out why. Subscribe to our podcast on CBC's podcasting page or through iTunes.